It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Bruthel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Bruthel in Carmel, California. It's broadcast number 470, December the 7th, 1980, the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, and I'll have a few comments to make about that later on in the program. 18 days left until Christmas, 4 weeks more, oh pardon me, until the new year. I get philosophical this time of year, winding up 1 year, getting ready for the next, combination of a lot of research and Christmas festivities, Hanukkah, and so forth, and I think of imagine what the next year will be like, and I look back and think of what we did the past year or the years that add up too quickly. What was the world like in 1980? How will we remember it when we're older? Many people take these tapes and tape record the programs, have for years, going back 9 years, some people. Will you play them for future generations? Will you put them away and listen to them? Will our technology make the Earth a better place? Are we using it properly? Why does everything seem to be going wrong? Who are the people abusing instruments and planet Earth? What do they intend to do when they use up the clean air and the facilities and the ocean, the free fish and sea life by polluting it with atomic waste, using up energy? Who are these people? And what instruments do they use to ruin our lives and other people's lives? How much power, I ask myself, do they really have in their hands? And how much weakness is in ours that we turn over to them, that they're not really that strong if we wanted to halt some of their insanity? Are dictators at fault, the military junta that takes over? Or do we give them what they want because they know we can be easily pacified and we're lazy? Or do we even have the ability to think about the problems and take care of ourselves? Do we learn by the lessons of past history? Or do we learn anything at all from history that can make life better? And what are misdirected conceptions of past failures? Why haven't we used them, and why are we repeating them over and over again? Is it inevitable that we have to keep repeating the old mistakes? And we can't learn from these? Will we depend on machines and computers to take away our ability to do things by ourselves? That's another problem. We'll get so lazy. How long can you hold on to those things that you can do to make your own life meaningful? Is there any way out of the obvious direction that we're heading? Or are you prepared to face what comes as easily as the Jews who took off all their clothing and believed that after the showers, they were going to get their job assignments? Is there any value in exposing injustices? Is there any hidden payoff for being alert and sensitive to political forces around you? There are sometimes articles or cartoons or sayings how to sit back and enjoy the bomb. You can even make money out of being aware of what's going on in the world. Even with the badness around, you can turn your instincts into becoming wealthy if you want, just by being afraid and knowledgeable of the forces of evil. I bought land in Canada 10 years ago because I was afraid of Richard Nixon, and after Reagan came in 2 months ago, the property increased 4 times over, and in fact it doubled everywhere up there. How to become a millionaire just worrying about Nixon and Reagan. You can go up there, you could have bought land for $100 an acre, and it's thousands and thousands of dollars now. People who are afraid of them turned that fear into a huge profit. Are you going to have a good year in 1981? And how is your self-respect and self-identity and your own knowledge that you did everything you could to stop this insanity? Nuclear insanity, military insanity, medical experimentation and injustices continuing, mind experiments, dictatorships, continuous torture, genocide, rape, murder, racism, Fascism, the mob, organized crime moving in, tighter to the White House every day. I don't know if you can do anything about it. I don't know if I can, but we try. I had an interesting week. I met a former member of the Senate from Indiana. He and his wife came up from San Diego to visit with me. He was working on the organized crime mafia infiltration into the state of Indiana, which he claims is the heart of organized crime in the United States, from Indiana, close to Chicago, Illinois. It reaches to Illinois, Miami, New Orleans, Cleveland, Kansas City, San Francisco, New Jersey, and Los Angeles. That the hub and the heart is Indiana. And he was working with Robert Kennedy to expose Sam Giancana, who months later would be part of the assassination team that killed John Kennedy. And after John and Robert Kennedy were killed, he left Indiana and came to California and opened a stamp and coin shop. That's his hobby, has been for years. And he went to the Nixon Library at San Clemente that we taxpayers pay for and copied many, many documents for me. He was very generous. He brought a carload of documents that he gave to me and others I copied as fast as I could. Links of E. Howard Hunt with Richard Nixon in the early days in the 50s and of Clint Murchison and Nixon, and a dialogue that suggested we'll do everything to stop John Kennedy the next time around. It was pre-assassination vocabulary, and on programs later this year, or maybe the first of next year, I'll begin to share these with you. There was an article in the newspaper this week, convictions reversed in the Wilmington 10 case. That was a case that went on in Richmond, Virginia. It was an injustice. Men were convicted of a firebombing they said they didn't do. 9 black men and 1 white woman, and they were finally released. There was attention drawn to them through Amnesty International and various people on human rights and violations right here in the United States. One of the quotations from a man involved in this case, a prosecutor, said, "I'm flabbergasted at the reversal, but frankly not that surprised once I found out who the judges were on the panel." Once they heard the case again and had a favorable judge, the case was reversed. And one of the persons involved said, in quotes, "The case has gone on for almost a decade, and the only reason why the court finally reversed our convictions was because of tremendous amount of pressure from justice-loving people all over the world." So people do matter. Geronimo Pratt's appeal, he was falsely imprisoned. He's still in prison, allegedly for killing a woman in Santa Monica. That appeal was turned down. Hugo Pinnell is serving a life sentence for killing a guard at Soledad that he didn't kill. There will be reversals in these cases. When people care, when you care about something, another thing happens, and you have to realize that your lives are not wasted. When you work on these cases or support Amnesty International or help these people psychologically, or the support systems, the mail they send out, send them a few dollars from around the country, and they're now out of prison. I read the newspapers every day, lots of them, and I still am in a state of shock about Ronald Reagan being president. I just want to run down, maybe I should do it once a week when I begin the program, the links of Reagan and the people around him to the political assassinations that I've studied for so many years. He covered up the California links, and there were strong California links to the murder of John Kennedy, and of course Robert Kennedy was murdered right in Los Angeles. A former chief of police, Ed Davis, the man of the criminal conspiracy section in L.A. that was so painful to so many innocent people and caused so many deaths, is going to be taking the oath as state senator in California. Arlen Specter of the Warren Commission is now going to be a senator from Pennsylvania. Evel Younger, the attorney general of California, the D.A. who prosecuted Sirhan, who worked hand in glove with Ed Davis and Reagan, is part of the transition team. Senator Howard Baker, who, according to William Colby's correspondence, was a CIA snitch to Nixon through the entire Watergate investigations, is the House Majority Leader. John J. McCloy of his law firm is moving to Washington, D.C., in addition to New York. He was a member of the Warren Commission. He's now giving advice to Ronald Reagan and he was in charge of suppressing the information of Lee Harvey Oswald being a United States intelligence agent in the Soviet Union. John Cooper of the Warren Commission is also an advisor to Ronald Reagan at this time and was photographed in the Washington Post with John J. McCloy. Leon Jaworski of the Warren Commission is one of the advisors to the Reagan team. Senator John Tower of Texas, who was corresponding with Lee Oswald to bring Marina to the United States and waving her papers to get here, is now going to have a high place on the cabinet of Ronald Reagan. John Tower is the brother-in-law of Samuel Cummings, notorious arms merchant of the world, CIA also, who funds paramilitary counterintelligence to every single country in the entire globe to encourage them to fight against each other. And of course, John Connally, who arranged the trip for John Kennedy to Dallas, Texas, is going to try to squeeze in a cabinet post. Richard Allen, who's worked with the CIA, and Robert Vesco. Vesco was linked to the California, Texas, Washington mob, organized crime, CIA troop that did the assassinations of John and Robert Kennedy. Allen was receiving $10,000 a month from Vesco. He was on Issues and Answers today, and it will be on the Reagan cabinet. And it goes on and on. The story of who killed John Kennedy is very much linked to those people in power taking oath of office soon, and it is sickening. And of course, Paul Laxalt, representing the Howard Hughes Organization, which was the umbrella for the assassination teams, will be the chief advisor to Ronald Reagan and the notorious Richard Nixon, who spent the evening before John Kennedy was murdered with J. Edgar Hoover and Clint Murchison Jr., giving the final okays to murder the man that he lost the election to in 1960, is a constant source of giving advice to Ronald Reagan. And don't forget Gerald Ford, the former president, who pardoned Nixon of all possible and future crimes, who was a member of the Warren Commission. If you don't understand why I've studied the Kennedy assassination for 17 years and the Robert Kennedy assassination since 1968, it's because these people are getting power and more power and being sworn into places of power on the bones and ashes of these dead political representatives who spoke for the people more actually than the corporations, and who spoke against organized crime and pollution and the nuclear test ban treaty and so forth. So maybe every week I should just read a litany of those assassins who have gained power, and then you'll understand where they're going now in the future. There's a book out called California Rich by Stephen Birmingham. It's a new book, and it gives you an idea about power and power in California. I had to fight so much, people asking me and interviewing me in radio talk shows and articles about what do you think about the Trilateral Commission? What do you think about the Council of Foreign Relations? The power, I always answered, came from California, just as the organized crime syndicate head or heart came from Indiana. And this book describes the rich in California and the skullduggery and what went on in California. Just a blurb of the book describes Edward Doheny, who brought in the state's first oil gusher, was the only man implicated in the Teapot Dome scandal who didn't go to jail. It tells how Mr. Spreckles won a large part of his sugar kingdom at a game, and how Mrs. Reagan, when she went to Sacramento when her husband was a governor, had never been up there, and she had to fly to Beverly Hills once a week because no one in Sacramento can do hair. And it goes into the railroad people, the Huntingtons and the Hopkins and Stanfords and the Hearst and so forth. California is where the Bank of Italy became the Bank of America, Mr. Giannini, and now the president of Bank of America is president of the World Bank. This is the home of the Hoover Institute that's going to direct, along with its sister branch, the George Washington University, the policies that were going to take us right into World War III. This is the home of Whittier, California, of Richard Nixon, of the Sirhan family that was brought by the CIA to Pasadena, the home of Ronald Reagan, of Rand Corporation, of an insane persons such as Howard Hughes and use aircraft as the umbrella for organized crime and the assassination teams, the Silicon Valley, the computers, the space program up and down the area between San Jose and San Francisco, Shirley Temple, Black, and Fantasyland and Disneyland. I've gone over this before when I talked about from Mr. Lamont's book on California, the first para-fascist state. But in order to understand 1981 or 82, now that Ronald Reagan is president, following on the heels of Richard Nixon, you have to know more about California, the Palm Springs meetings, the home of Mr. Annenberg and Gerald Ford, and Gerald Ford on the board of directors of 20th Century Fox, now with Grace Kelly, and La Costa, the great institution in San Diego with Mo Dalitz and C. Arnholt Smith, and the Hollywood studios, the Nazi Gestapo connections in Warner Brothers and MGM and 20th Century Fox and RKO. California is an amazing state that has not yet been analyzed with its influence all over the world, but the power brokers are here, and the fantasy land and the entertainment is here. And in between here and Wall Street, there are very many decisions that the American people can make themselves. I put down a few headlines just as an overview of what we can expect in 1981. And these headlines are just from this week and last week. They're all dated from November the 26th until December the 7th today, just to give an idea of what's going on in some countries. And we'll get a view of next year. A crime, I'll just run them off, and they come from the Washington Post, New York Times, Monterey Herald, and so forth. Crime increase, putting strains on the Irish police. Broad wave of arrests underway in Haiti. Haiti, shaken by economic plight, cracks down on prominent critics. Rightist offensive, seen in Central America. The Jewish question in France. Nazi bombings and killings. Police blinding prisoners in India with ice picks and pouring acid in their eyes. China assails Reagan's advisor, CIA Ray Klein. China suspects Reagan and trouble with the mainland. OAS delegates prod the Six Nations on human rights performances. This is coming out of Madrid. Israel assails the rise of anti-Semitism at the European conference. World outrage may not be enough to spare Kim Dae-jung. Now, if Kim Dae-jung is killed in Korea, I seriously believe that I will begin to take the steps to leave this country. There is so much you can take and be American, but this man is similar to Gandhi and Martin Luther King, and if they murder him in Korea, I really think I will have had enough. U.S.-Brazil relations faltered. Brazil says, mind your own business. Amsterdam cops battle squatters. U.S. considers sending arms to Jordan to quiet the war threat. Rise of tough young army officers dims the fate of SEAL dissidents. This is again Korea. TASS accuses Brzezinski of pushing for revolt in Poland. Lon Nol's $1 million fund questioned. He took $1 million when he fled Cambodia. U.S. doubts that the invasion of Poland is imminent. We may not go in there right away, but we may go later. U.S. Western European leaders consider food aid for Poland. King Hussein urges the United States to speed delivery of arms for Jordan. Rightist Salvador coup termed possible. Japanese role in NATO security urged. We need more Japanese arms for NATO. Our national honor is at stake. We should have no dealings with Iran until it frees the 52. Then there's another article. We should start sending arms to Iran. Latin American poverty deepens. Three in Pretoria, South Africa, face a hanging. This is for an ambush. Nobody was killed, but it's like the Steve Bilko case. Three are going to be hung, but nobody was harmed, and the trial proved they didn't touch anybody. They're going to be hung. West Germans upset by Allied scrutiny of their role in defense. Gaddafi on the verge of significant military win in Chad. Somali seeks arms from reluctant U.S. Washington fears that sending arms would alienate black African allies. Schmidt in Germany urges the pursuit of arms control talks. He's getting a little nervous over there. Caribbean ally may confront Reagan with early tests on military aid. Barbados has elections next spring. Will Reagan help them? Jamaican leader cites Reagan's opportunity. Now that they have control of the government, the White House, and the CIA, they'll begin the World Bank to send money to Jamaica. That was after 175 deaths to make the election possible. Israel's black Hebrews raise troublesome questions. They're not accepted by the white Jews. Spaniards hold a rally in honor of Franco. Misery cities, refugees in Somali, hunger, crowded homes, large article in New York Times. South Korea arrests. 1,210 were arrested, 67 publications closed down. Canada lifts the grain embargo on the Soviet Union. After 10 months of obeying the United States, Canada, the country that sold and traded with Red China, Cuba, and Russia since World War II, now has said the United States, forget it. They have no enemies on planet Earth, and they don't want any. Uganda famine. Fathers give food, solace to tribesmen. Thousands of dying and starving there. China's new rash of human rights abuses. This is on torture and concentration camps. Coup in Upper Volta ousts the elected leader. Military power takes over without violence. This is a country with an annual income of $110. They have manganese, but the World Bank will not give them the money until the coup takes place. Once the military leader is in, we'll build it up, just as we held back money from Jamaica. New military rulers in Turkey. They'll keep the mullahs in the mosques, and Turkey is starting its repressions. West German military, the center of controversy, fears of World War II militarism. Now, these are just this week's newspapers. I didn't go back for the other 52 weeks during the year. I'm just reading to you at the end of 1980 what the headlines look like. Arctic City, prime target for NATO missile strike, Soviet military center. Thatcher's conservative policies failed to revive the economy. Botha, the prime minister of South Africa, warns of folly of sanctions. U.S., stay away. South Africa and Brazil have told us to shove it, get out of our lives. Inflation, debt, spiral in Brazil, singeing the banks and consumers. In Paris, here's another headline. In Paris, the Battle of Le Monde heats up. That's the newspaper that has had various reporters arrested that is investigating the crimes and conspiracies of Giscard d'Estaing and the French government. This is the only free newspaper in Paris. It's the only one where the people of any intelligence can get information, and there's a controversy on Le Monde. In Tin Town, water is often scarce, a large story about South Africa. Another a big story, amid South Africa of plenty, hunger rules. Another story on Turkey. Turkish town is poor amid riches of history. Turkey attempts to put freedom in its place and have less democracy. A huzu, another article, a huzu of persecuted people and much more. Amnesty International conference in London, while the other one was going on in Madrid. Percy warned Soviets not to use force in Poland. Another one, police and followers still remember Yukio Mishima. Mishima died November 26, 1970. 10 years ago, he was built a private army, designed uniforms, and so forth. He was an extreme rightist like Franco, who didn't like the humiliation of defeat. An avid fascist who commit Harry Caray. Air Force planes not big enough to transport Army's new tanks. That's the United States. Another long story on Imelda Marcos, the Philippines iron butterfly, and a quotation, the little people want a star. She's very much like Evita Peron, and she gives them what they want. Another story, the U.S. may deliver arms to Iran as demanded. Another one, use force against Iran, a former citizen urges. Thirst for violence spreads over Great Britain. Another one, Romania, without cash to buy Western goods, is turning to barter. Another, a scandal is created by a book on Australian foreign policy. This book has been suppressed and stopped. It tells about the United States using bases in Australia, using land, and not allowing the Australians to know what it was for. Now, a lot of the Australian bases go down to Antarctic and also for the space program and intelligence and storing atomic weapons. We've used that country, and now somebody's come out with a book, but so far we can't get in the United States. Zimbabwe needs skilled workers. An article about that country, rich in asbestos, silver, coal, nickel, tin, copper, cobalt, and 31 other minerals. The truth is that under Africa are so many minerals, it's unbelievable. This is the wealth of the world that hasn't been tapped. And the purpose of stalling off developing the minerals is to put in the military ruling class in every country and not give them independence. When a country like Zimbabwe gets its independence before the goodies are dug out, they can't get the skilled workers to get it out. And just as in other countries, Jamaica, where we hold back, or in Guyana, we hold back until Burnham does what we want, and then we pull out the bauxite. Last one, an article, Colombia and South America, violence and riches mark Colombia's bizarre emerald business, and it tells about their necessity to deal with the mob. The government has a ringleader of gangs, and they have bloody wars, and they have these very, very wealthy people waiting to dig out the emeralds in Colombia, in addition to the narcotics traffic. They described somebody who works in these mines, a Japanese James Bond, a 46-year-old person, who he only wears one pistol, and the people working in the emerald mines are loaded with pistols on the front, the back, the pockets, and the vest. And there's an article in the San Jose Mercury last week, and one of the people working there said, "I wear one pistol. If they killed Kennedy, they can kill me." And he said, I find you can avoid problems if you have a gun and produce it at the right time. Now, this person knows they killed Kennedy, but the mob is working for emeralds there. Well, every country, Iran, Romania, South America, Brazil, London, Jordan, King Hussein in Jordan, Iran, the United States builds airplanes, the tanks don't fit. We're talking about confronting Russia, Poland, or bombing their bases up in the Arctic. There are questions here of what is going wrong. These are just the foreign headlines, some that caught my eye just in 1 week, and I have to put them in a pile and read them and look at them. What went wrong and what is going wrong? Well, what is going wrong, I believe, pinpoints back to those days when World War I was over, when we began to arm Germany for World War II to try and stop the Soviet Union from becoming a communist nation. And then more recently, what happened at the end of World War II, where we took Hitler's chief of intelligence and he formed our CIA, and all those decisions that they made of the Cold War are those things that are bringing us to bankruptcy and destruction today. In the book on Galen, the book The General Was a Spy, you, Trevor Roper, asked the question in the introduction of that book, what was the result of the Secret Service of Hitler joining the United States government, working for the setting up the CIA, and then being head of German intelligence, this Nazi? Trevor Roper said, any Secret Service justifies itself by its results. How well did Galen, in fact, serve his Western masters? Did he do what he was supposed to do, or was the job of Galen a failure? And I believe that we have to look at the old team from Herbert Hoover on up through Truman, Eisenhower, and the Dulles brothers, and the State Department up through today, and particularly those behind Reagan, because they made every mistake possible. And now those old dogs, these 60, 70-year-old men, are going to make your decisions for the future. It's absolutely frightening that people that made so many errors that bring so many people to the brink of death and torture and exploitation and poverty are going to go into this administration again. The John J. McCloys, the John Coopers, the Richard Nixons, the Leon Jaworskis, Albert Jenners, you name it, the John Collins, the whole team of advisors, Richard Allen and so forth, the whole gang behind this new administration are the same ones that have festered other countries, brought so much poverty and exploitation and hatred towards us in America. Well, I think this is the end of the first half hour. We're going to turn the tape over for those of you that record this, and I'll be back with you in about 60 seconds.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.